Welcome to Relocate Mom Radio, where genpreneurs demonstrate parenting best practices. Justin Donald, known as the Warren Buffett of lifestyle investing, is the pioneer of structuring deals and disciplined investment systems in what he calls more than a brand, it's a movement. He's also a father and husband who soars by putting family first. In this radio segment, our guest answers straightforward questions from me and my daughter as we probe his childhood influences, CPAs versus tax strategists, real estate, insurance, propaganda, wealth, and the mindset that empowers it. In our hour together, we take Justin all over the place, and you'll notice he doesn't flinch. It's a wild time, and we trust you'll enjoy it.
Thank you so much for being a part of what has become a podcast series, because that is what the speakers from Saturday all thought this should become. And so just to again welcome you, and thank you for your patience with the noise level, because I am living in a transitional shelter for youth and young adults, which I'm not one of, but they graciously took a risk on inviting me here. And so there will be some noise at times, but just know that's the reason why. I have been so excited for this opportunity because of what you provide and the invitation from you to even be a part of your mastermind on a very small scale has done so much. I am truly honored. And so one of the first questions I want to start with, and then just bear with me just one second. I'm not a tech person at all, as my daughter knows. I want to give this brief introduction before we jump in. And so Justin Donald, known as the Warren Buffett of lifestyle investment, is the pioneer of structuring deals and disciplined investment systems. So let go of the fear of finance and get ready to take notes from the husband and father who soared by putting his family first. Thank you so much, Justin. So my first question, if you can think back to childhood, as most of the speakers have gone, what is the pivotal or a pivotal moment, a crossroad in your childhood that led up to the lifestyle that you enjoy today?
You know, it's a great question. You know, I feel blessed to have had some incredibly supportive parents, loving parents. I never once felt like my parents didn't love me, you know, with exception to times maybe I was really mad at them and they were disciplining me. And maybe I was just real hot-headed. But, you know, my parents just allowed me to stretch my wings and they allowed me to be who I was. They encouraged the curiosity that I had. You know, I think I was lucky in the sense that they embraced my crazy ideas from a young age. And even when they weren't the archetype or you know, people that had the life that was, you know, so desired, like that I so desired, they were really helpful in helping me think of people that maybe were those entrepreneurs, since I was cut from a different cloth than the rest of my family. And luckily, when I was young, one of my best friend's dads was an entrepreneur, he owned a software company when I really didn't even know what software was. And that's what opened my eyes. I saw the style that he lived. I saw the flexibility he had. I saw how many people worked for him. You know, his son, my buddy, Dustin. In fact, his name is Dustin and mine was Justin. So that used to be kind of a fun little joke amongst people, Justin and Dustin. But we did everything together and I got a chance to actually like go into the office and see what happened and play around and learn, you know, meet the people on the team. And it just showed me that the path that my parents took and everyone that we knew really well wasn't the only path. So for me, that opened my eyes.
How awesome it is to have had a visual, a mentor, a role model. to give you permission to explore. It's so beautiful. You discovered the concept of lifestyle investing, and it's evident that you believe it is a point that you heavily promote within your mastermind and for members. So give us a sense of why you're so excited about it and how did it improve your own life?
Well, the reason I'm excited about it is because I've seen what it's done in my life, and what it is it's a pivot. So it's not that I'm, you know, not working. That sounds absolutely boring and horrible. You know, for people to think, oh, I don't have to work. That's not an inspiring, compelling vision of the future. But I think when you can help people like pivot and transition into thinking, you know, hey, if I don't have to work, if I've got income that covers my life and I don't have to work for money, what would I work for? Who would I work for? What would I do? What inspires me? What am I passionate about? What do I feel like is utilizing the gifts that God's blessed me with? Like, how would I live more purposefully and in alignment with what makes me feel alive every day? And I think when people can answer that question, when they don't have to work and they get to work, there's this transition that takes place and people just come alive. And for a lot of people, it's not that they don't want to do what they're doing. A lot of people got into what they're doing because they did like it, but they're overworked, they're burnt out. So if they could get on a schedule that was like, they're doing it for 25 or 30 hours a week, a lot of them would probably still continue what they're doing, but plenty would not. Plenty would say, hey, this isn't what I signed up for. I'm just doing this to pay the bills. I have no interest in this. And when you have your finances taken care of, it gives you the freedom and the courage to just move and pivot and figure out what it is that will really fill you up.
Well, honestly, you just answered my next question. And that was really related to young people. If you could speak to a teenager or a young adult who's been through trauma, can't even imagine the possibility of being valuable enough to have a mindset like that, probably didn't have mentors like you describing, what would you say to them? Can this really be possible for them, or is this just like a unique set aside, you know? How did you even come to a place to think like that, right? And you literally are answering that question.
Yeah, you know, it's, I think the earlier you can start with this type of methodology, the better, because then you kind of break patterns and you break shackles that you're eventually going to get into. You know, it's not that corporate America isn't right for some people, because it is. You know, it's a good place for a lot of people. It's certainly not right for everyone, but I think once you get bound by, you know, the corporate ladder and the golden handcuffs and the safety and security of a certain amount of income for a certain amount of work based on a certain skill set, it becomes a lot harder to leave. So for younger people, I just say, you know, before you make that move and make that commitment to something that's going to be hard to break free of later, start, you know, playing around with and experimenting with things that you may want to do, businesses that you may want to start, or real estate that you want to invest in, or just things that are maybe not, you know, the traditional mainstream path. You know, I know not everyone goes to college, and I think college today is a lot less valuable than it was in the past. But I think there's often this path of like high school to college to corporate America to, you know, investing in a 401k and IRAs and government sponsored plans. Then you retire. And I think that system just doesn't serve people the way that it used to. And so, and we don't even know that system works. For a lot of people, that system doesn't work. So what's the system of, like, you know, high school to maybe it is college, maybe it's not college, maybe it's entrepreneurship, or maybe it's apprenticeship. And then, you know, from there, you know, maybe it's not corporate America. Maybe it's working in someone else's business as an operator and learning that business and going on your own. And this could be, you know, a trade, you know, a professional trade. This could be, you know, your own enterprise. This could be you going as an apprentice in anyone's business or organization. But I think we're going to see a movement in the future that's a lot more apprenticeship based, as opposed to, you know, the dogmatic way that we've kind of looked at education and, you know, going to 4 years and getting a degree and, you know, getting into corporate America.
Honestly, this is such a dual-edged sword that you're describing. My daughter is the host of this podcast, which is why we can do it, because I don't know the technology well enough. At the same time, she just finished her freshman year. And because of conversations that I share with her from your podcast, from, you know, your mastermind, anywhere I can glean, I share those with her, and she is literally strategizing right now to step into her first investment. And so I know she'll have questions before we're done. At the same time, the notion of thinking more broadly is useful. She's clearly the type that belongs in a college environment. At the same time, leaving graduation, having also been mentored and invested in, I think that's a very strong place for her to be. And you're going to get to see through some of her questions why I say that. And why I'm so thrilled that she is listening to this right now. Outstanding.
I love it. And by the way, I think what you're doing here is incredible. It's more than commendable. It's fantastic. And what you've gone through and how you've weathered that storm and how you've shown up for your daughter, for your network, for the people that are checking this out. I mean, what you've done is exceptional. And if people can just glean from the mindset and habits and achievement and achievers, you know, drive and, you know, your competency to just make things happen, I think they're going to learn a lot. So I just want to, you know, pay that, you know, respect and admiration forward to you.
Well, thank you. I have learned to receive, and I do truly, I'm honored by your words. You also need to know the tremendous impact that you're having on our conversation existing right now. Because first of all, to learn about your background, the accumulation of wealth, the way that you treat your family, your value system, the whole picture. It isn't just that you talk about how to, you know, do income at a very high level, but you practice what you preach. And the fact that you put your family first, that's really why we're on here together. That touches my heart so deeply. In fact, one of the things that you showed me that I could never have imagined is that we share a very similar mindset. I've homeschooled my daughter throughout her life, but in all circumstances, whether we're in a shelter, sitting on a curb, sleeping on a floor, in every space, I have used those environments as classrooms to teach her. And I have asked God to help me, because I refuse to allow anything we go through to frame her belief, her mindset. And I'm so honored. I'm going, who would have ever thought the only thing that distinguished our choice was wealth? And so when you say that you take time, any place, at any time of the day to listen to your baby girl as long as she needs you. I mean, literally, when I've been in meetings, she has known from the earliest age that she could walk in that room. There's no knocking on the door. There's no asking permission. You are safe in the space, okay? And so she's been in corporate spaces where children are not welcome, and literally transformed those environments. And in shelters where there are no children, she's been sought out for designing curriculum. It's so hard to describe, you know, what's possible, but you are such an inspiration. I don't want to lose track of questions, but I have to tell you, this is why this is so valuable to me. It really is. But and with that, one of my questions is this lifestyle investing concept. How did you come about it, and how has it really changed your life?
Well, that's a fun question. You know, the journey took a little while to figure out what it was that I called this thing that I was doing. It felt like it was working. I had other friends that were interested in it. And I remember hanging out with a friend, doing dinner, a couple friends, but one specifically was like, well, tell me, like, what's your big picture? What's your big vision? And I said, well, I think too many people are focused on the wrong things, and I'd rather help them get focused on the right things and be, you know, I feel like we're a society of people living on default. You know, it's like life on default. And I just wish that I could help people, or wanted to be able to help people to just be a little bit more proactive in a life by design and figuring out what would be inspiring for them, which will be different for everyone. But yeah, my story for me, it's like, I just want to live what a life that, you know, I want to make sure that I'm doing the best with what I've been blessed with. And at the same time, I want to be inspired in the work that I do. And so I feel like if I can create the time and the space to proactively plan what would be a really great life for me, a life of meaning, a life of impact, and that I can live that, then I can have that influence on other people and help them do the same thing, because there are these ripple effects that happen inside of each person's network and kind of ecosystem. And I think the more that we can get people living intentionally and not just, you know, reactively. I think most people live reactively, like it's default, it's putting out problems, it's going from thing to thing to thing, meeting to meeting to meeting. And I just want to help people carve out time and a space to think, well, if life was on my terms, what would it look like? What would a normal work day look like? What would a work week look like? What would travel and adventure look like? What would I do that would be inspiring on a regular basis? And if we can incorporate that in, I think people are going to live lives that are just full of more meaning and passion, and it's going to rub off on people. It's going to make them and the people that they're connected to that much better off.
Oh, I'm so with you. I'm so with you. I listened to your interview with Garrett Gunderson, and he mentioned things like private placement, overfunded whole life policies that don't experience the volatility of the market. And absolutely the whole thing. And then this whole, the quickest return on investment. I mean, this honestly doesn't even sound real, these concepts, you know? And so, is it possible for somebody who is just starting out? I mean, what would you say? What would be a step in the right direction to even begin moving toward that kind of a thing?
Yeah, so I do think that, you know, with life insurance, there's a lot of different kinds. Most of them don't make sense. Most of the agents and you know, the people that put these policies in place are not that good. So I'd say most of the time, they're actually not good. Term policies, I think, only pay out about 1% of the time, 1.1% of the time or something like that. And permanent life, you know, if structured properly, can certainly pay out very well. And what I like about it is no matter what happens, when there is a death, there is a payout to the family. But while you're living, you can actually utilize it. So is that right for everyone? No, you know, it's certainly not. But is it right for a lot of people? Yeah. I mean, if you look at the people that have grown a lot of wealth, I think that that is a very common, you know, product or strategy that people have used. If you look at the wealthiest people, you know, in the world, specifically the wealthiest people in the US, yeah, I do think it's part of what most of them do. Not all of them, but does it make sense if someone is massively in debt? Probably not. We probably need to get out of debt first. You know, does it make sense if someone, you know, is fighting to make the premium payment and it's really challenging and there's not a lot of money left over for other things? That probably also doesn't make sense. So I think there's a time and a place for it. And I think that it is part of the strategy. It's not the only strategy. It's not an end all be all thing. But when done properly, it can really serve as kind of like the, let's call it like the top of the funnel. Like you can use that to borrow against to make other investments. And I think it can be a good thing. For me, it has been.
I wanted, Adriel, if I'm not saying this right, but she's growing up in a generation that's skeptical of America, the mindset of wealth, of tax strategies that, though they may be legal, feel ugly, feel yucky inside, because there hasn't been an education and training. And this, the education that is out there is literally saying that those who are wealthy are responsible to not be. It's an opposite thinking, right? So if you could speak a little bit to that, and Adriel, if I'm saying that inaccurately, let me know. But this is a conversation that she and I have had. And so I love if you could give us a rebuttal.
Yeah, you know, I think that you're right in many regards to, you know, not fully trust. I mean, I think we live in a day and age where we need to trust but verify. You know, I think that is really important. And I do think we live in a time and a space where those that are supposed to serve us, they don't serve us in the way that most people think. With a lot of people and even in political positions, they're often serving themselves first before, you know, what that policy may look like, or there's something that they can get out of it. That's not for everyone, you know, but there are plenty of people that's the case. And, you know, if you look at, you know, this isn't a message on politics, but, you know, at one point in time in our history, it was, you know, an elected position and it was, you know, a short term, and then that term was done, right? Not like career positions. And so, you know, it's interesting. You would get all these people from all these different walks of life, all these experiences and you know, track records. And now it's a little bit different than that. You have people that the only thing they've done is politics, but they may not have a good understanding and view of the world. So a lot of what is passed, I don't think is in the best interests of the citizens. And so I do think it's right to be skeptical. But I also think, you know, you had mentioned tax strategy, and yeah, if something doesn't feel good, if it feels, you know, gross or yucky, then that, you know, you should trust your intuition on that. But I look at tax strategy in three different ways. I look at tax evasion. That's illegal. People go to prison for that. Stay away from that. I look at tax avoidance, which there are strategies where you avoid paying taxes. You defer the taxes till later. You know, that's not punishable by prison. These are things that are actually the government has, the IRS has in the tax code that says, hey, if you invest in, you know, these certain qualified plans, we'll defer the taxes on them so you can reduce your tax bill this year. And then, you know, the other camp is tax strategy. And I think most people don't live in that world. And if you really spent time, you know, learning it and finding best in class in that space, there's amazing things you can do when you take a plan holistically, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road and say, hey, what are we planning for? What are the best strategies? Because most people tip the government. They pay them way too much. I don't think any of us feel like the government, you know, is the best steward of any of our money. I want to pay what I owe, but I also want to use the tax code, which is a playbook that basically says, if you do these things, we're going to, you know, give you these credits or these discounts or these deductions because as a nation, we need it. And so I'm just following the playbook. And I think the better educated people are, the better they follow that playbook and the less they pay in taxes. But it's okay. A lot of people say, oh, that's bad. That's not bad. You're paying less in taxes because you're doing things that are actually stimulating the government, right? You're stimulating small business, you're stimulating agriculture, you're stimulating housing, you're stimulating renewable energy, all the things that are outlined in the tax code where you get some tax advantages is because the government needs these things. Our nation needs these things. And if you choose to partner with them in a way that's advantageous, then you pay less because you're helping them do more.
And you know what? That's so powerful because it was a new concept for me to think that the government writes code in some cases based upon what will stimulate the economy. So that by following roads and having somebody that is expert, because not all CPAs and tax accountants are that. Honestly, you know, I've used them for years, but have never heard what you talk about. And so to be able to put that information out there, it's beautiful for even young people to know these are categories, these are options, right? There's no gun to anybody's head. But when you've never heard that you can partner with what the government needs, that shifts the whole thinking. I mean, I'm hoping it does that for you, dear, you know, and an opportunity to look a little bit differently at some of the yuck that's put out there, because some of it is divisive against what would cause our economy to grow. What would generate networks and mentorship and relationships that we're describing?
You know, it's also interesting because most people think that CPAs are the ones that, you know, make all these decisions. My experience is most CPAs don't actually know the tax code that well. Most of them just file tax returns
Wow.
and they're not proactive, they're reactive, and they're very reactive in an ignorant way because they don't know the code. It doesn't mean every CPA is that way, but I'd say the vast majority I've ever worked with and talked to and interviewed are very much that way. And I'm in a community where, you know, we've got 120 members that, you know, have different CPAs, and I'm hearing the same story that they don't know these tax strategies. And so, you know, people that have the ability, they hire tax strategists that help direct the CPAs, because the CPAs typically aren't proactive enough, don't know the tax code well enough. So you hire someone that actually does, and they teach these CPAs how to, you know, effectively reduce taxes for their clients in a very legal, very honest, very ethical and straightforward manner.
When you said, when you mentioned the fact that you meet with a tax or finance team, however you put it, on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
What do you need to talk about every single month? Right? That's so out of the ordinary.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, monthly is definitely abnormal. For us, it's very necessary. I think at a minimum, people should be meeting at least 2 to 4 times a year with their legal team, because, you know, I mean, in a best case scenario, most people probably should meet quarterly. In a worst case scenario, they probably should meet at least twice. I meet monthly because we have things going on in our business that I think require, I want our team to be up to speed in real time as best as we can. And every month we're adjusting. What did we think was going to happen? Where are we? What's actual, you know, taxable income today? What's our goal of taxable income? What strategies do we need to employ? Because sometimes you get to the end of the year and your CPA doesn't know what happens until you send it to them. And by the way, I've been this person. End of the year, I send all my stuff over, or maybe even months into the new year before April 15th. Maybe it was even on April 15th. And it's like, wait a minute, I don't have time to, you know, come up with strategies. This is last minute. Let me just file these taxes. And, you know, that's kind of how the CPAs are. And I just felt like if I could get out ahead of it and we could talk about this early, the earlier we talk about it, the more strategies we have. By the end of the year, a lot of the strategies that you would want to use are gone. A lot of the tax credits that exist are gone. So I think we want to be, I mean, a lot of things end at the calendar year. Other things end, you know, at April 15th. So a quarter after the previous calendar year. But how much more ahead are you if on a monthly basis you're discussing this? So for me, I just think that that's the better path for our team. And I have a lot of people involved at this point in time. We've got a lot of coordination that needs to take place. But I just feel more confident knowing that my tax and legal team is in the loop every month with everything that's going on. All the books are in front of them. They know all the numbers, everything that they could need, they have it. And so we're actually able to do some, you know, make great plans and utilize some good strategy.
My goodness, that is so, so powerful. It's a way of thinking, shifting the mindset. And how beautiful to do that for young people to have the opportunity to experience the wealth. I mean, we had a recent podcast where Christina Wise, who is indirectly how I learned about you.
Oh, I love Christina. She's awesome.
Oh my gosh.
We've done breakfast here in Austin. She's a sweetheart and smart and amazing.
Yes,
I'm a big fan.
And she's glowing right now, by the way. She's looking so beautiful at this stage in her life. Here's another controversial one that my daughter and I have talked about. And so legally, you mentioned that it's possible to be in the lowest tax bracket while taking advantage of some of the strategies that you're discussing right now and other mechanisms that allow you to also gain wealth at the same time. How is that possible now that we've established it's legal? So how is that possible? So let's say, you know, young adults are in a place where they're in the lowest strategy of tax, you know, position. What are some things that just generally they could start to do?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think there's a lot of different numbers here at play. You've got the actual numbers. What does your business do? What's your income? You know, whether you have a job or a business, they're the real numbers of what comes in. Then there's your taxable income. That's a whole nother story, because there's some deductions, some offsets, some depreciation. And then, you know, from there, you know, if you are also an investor, you have these investment forms like a 1099 or a K-1 that tell a totally different story based on how that investment is performing. And that's not even the same typically as the other two, but it can be probably a little bit closer on the taxable income side. So let's simplify this a little bit. We'll just use a simple example like real estate. You buy a real estate rental. Doesn't matter how big it is. You just buy a rental. It's producing income. You have income coming in. You're renting out a unit or several units. Well, the government basically says we need to support housing. You know, we need people that can, you know, we need as many available places for people to rent because there's a supply shortage. So for anyone that does do this, we're going to give you this opportunity to, you know, basically reduce your expenses. So you can offset anything you spent as a business expense. So that would be a deduction. And then we're also going to allow you to take something called depreciation, which is basically this idea that your building is worth a certain amount, but every year that goes by, there's some wear and tear on that building. And so you can take some of that and offset what you earned. And so you just get to straight line, you know, reduce that as a deduction on your tax return. And there's other, you know, strategies, legislation, things that have allowed people to take bonus depreciation or accelerated depreciation. So instead of having a schedule that allows you to do it over many years, and each asset's a little bit different in how many years you can take. But this law that went into effect basically said, hey, you can take this whole term of depreciation and move it into year one. And so you have a lot of people that they are making rental income, but once you reduce the depreciation, you deduct that depreciation, it makes it look like no income's coming in. It offsets that income. And so this is another way that a lot of people use real estate to reduce their taxes, but in a way that is very much accepted by the government. The IRS says, the government says we need housing. The IRS says, hey, if you buy housing and rent it out to people and you help us, you know, help the government solve for their problem, then we're going to give you these, you know, little things called, you know, business expense deductions and depreciation. And really depreciation is just kind of a figure pulled out of thin air. But that's what it is. And it's very possible that you can make a lot of passive income on a deal, but owe nothing in taxes because you are able to offset your taxable income through the depreciation and other expenses.
Well, I haven't heard from her yet, but I truly believe you've made our family life easier. Yeah. And then my next question, and I think I have two left because I want to value your time. Earlier, I asked about speaking to young people, and I want to come back to that because I'm living with young people, as well as I have a daughter of my own who is in college. And your interview with Brock Fortner was stunning. I was really set back by how still, and that you said he's your youngest mastermind member.
That's right. That's awesome. Right.
Yeah. And I want to share, with my audience some of the tips that he mentioned, and they were just so profound. For example, you are your number one asset and your business is your number one investment. Be in the room with people you want to be like. Hire a coach for whatever you want to improve. Join a peer group at a higher level than you. Record every session. So beautiful. And I love the way that you're able, with your personality, to make people feel so comfortable that you draw out of them those kind of deep wells. It's absolutely beautiful to watch, or to listen to, because it's a podcast. So yeah, yeah. And then what's next for you?
Well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words, and Brock is a friend. He's a mastermind member and he's doing incredible things in the world. You know, is a very young guy. I mean, I wish I was where he was. you know, and where your daughter Adriel is like learning all these things. I didn't know any of this when I was your age. And I think it's incredible, you know, for me and for us, what's next is we really feel like the Lifestyle Investor is more than a brand. We feel like it's a movement, and we really want to encourage and help facilitate people to, you know, grasping hold of this movement and making it real in their life. We're in the process of starting and rolling out a Lifestyle Investor Foundations group, which is going to be for younger adults, 19 to 29. So this
they
is
got a little bit slower now.
Yeah, this is brand new. We haven't even talked about it. This is the first time I've mentioned it publicly, and it probably is going to launch in September. And you know, we want to kind of appeal to, we've heard from enough parents now that they want their kids involved in what we're doing. And so we're trying to find a way to incorporate that in and teach them lessons and skills that we think will be invaluable to them. And we've got mastermind members, Nick and Molly Pastermack, who are wonderful people, just so caring, so great. They already work with a lot of youngsters because they own a bunch of franchises. And so they're teaching leadership skills, and they're going to partner with me to roll it out. So those are a couple of the new things. And you know, I guess one other thing is my updated and expanded edition of the Lifestyle Investor is about to launch in about a month. So if you look on the bookshelf behind me, you see the main one, but the one that's in black up above is the new book. And so we added... Gosh, it was probably from the white covered book. We probably have one third more content in the black covered book.
Oh
so
my
it's,
goodness!
It's well, listen, it's full.
I got to tell you, this is more than a little bit exciting because my heart was for young people to be. Here's one of the things, and my daughter just itching to talk to you. She has texted and said, when am I going to get a turn in this conversation? But before I turn it over to her, one of the things that she shared that was so touching, and I've heard it said repeatedly in her age group, is that this generation has not experienced the America that I described. They don't know a taste of it. And so a lot of the hostility and the anger and the behaviors that we've seen are the result of being left out of what they keep being told is the American lifestyle. And so when you talk about a foundation that will present this kind of opportunity to young people, I'm sitting here again fighting back tears because I know the value of what you offer, and it is my intention to continue to move forward until I'm able to join at a higher level, because that's my goal now that I know about you. And so, to think that you're thinking about young people in this way, Justin, thank you so much. And so my conversation with you, the dog barking, is going to end. I'm going to turn it over to my daughter because she said, can I have a turn?
Well, amazing. I'm looking forward to having us chat as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then I think it should be like two or three questions and then you'll be free to go. And we really do appreciate your time.
Yeah,
so
my pleasure.
The first question that I have, just to kind of kick off, is if you could bust one myth about wealth building, what would it be?
Ooh, that's so tough because I want to bust so many of them. you know, if I had to pick one, you know, it's probably, probably that it takes money to make money. You know, that's kind of like a common, you know, saying, a cliche. That's one that I would probably say because it totally, I mean, if you flip it on its head, you can totally challenge the foundation and basis of that, because I don't think that that's the way that you make money. I mean, you can, it's not the only way. And I think that for many of us that, you know, myself included, we came from rougher walks of life, harder to maybe get ahead, but figured out how to do it, and figured out how to do it without money, you know, with developing skill sets, developing a relationship with people, with peers, with mentors, with people playing the game of life and business at a higher level. But I kind of have to dovetail into the fact that the other myth is that the financial experts that you think are so much smarter than you probably aren't, you know, and a lot of them aren't using the same strategies that they're putting people into because they're higher commission products. A lot of them aren't actually doing that well themselves financially. You know, the track record of most financial planners and money managers. And when I say most, I mean, you know, we've got somewhere between 95 and 96% of the people managing money in the US that can't even outperform the S&P 500 index. So you pay more for them to produce a worse result than if you just invested in an index yourself. And, you know, that's measured in these 15-year increments. But if you look at 30 years, it's actually less than 1% that actually beat the market. So, you know, I used to outsource my financial education to other people thinking they were smarter than me. And that's just the wrong way to go because I was taken advantage of. The results weren't as good as what they could have or should have been. And then the way that these firms, you know, kind of twist the numbers and manipulate what's happening makes you think that you're doing better than you really are by speaking in average numbers, not actual numbers. So yeah, I just learned, hey, I've got to in-house my financial education, not outsource it.
Wow, that's huge. That's really, really, that's awesome. Thank you. And if you were to look at how parents communicate with their kids about money, how would you reframe common language that you see?
Well, I think the problem right out of the gates is most parents don't talk to their kids about money. And when they do, it's limiting beliefs around money, like money doesn't grow on trees. And if, you know, if only we were rich like so-and-so. I mean, it's like, I feel like for a lot of people, it's like a debilitating language and pattern and mindset around money. So I think first and foremost, the education doesn't happen. Secondly, when it does happen, it's actually not very productive. And then third, I think money's just been taboo. You know, it's for some reason, someone came up with this idea that we shouldn't talk about it because it's rude. I mean, that's, you know, culturally, that's how it was when I grew up. Like, oh, Justin, don't ask someone how much money they make. That's rude. Don't ask them what they do. But how are we going to educate people if we're going to make it a taboo subject? Like, we should be able to talk about it like anything else. So I don't think people are going to get, you know, good at finances until we openly speak about finances. What works? What doesn't work? What are good mindsets? What are poor mindsets? What are cliches and sayings that don't actually serve us that for whatever reason linger around in the family discussions?
Absolutely. Yeah. When you talk to your own family and you look at your life, what's one way that you've reframed your own language?
Well, my family has always looked at money from a very limited lens, a limited standpoint. There's not much there. It's very scarce. You know, you've got to pinch pennies. That was a common saying. Money doesn't grow on trees. We're not a bank. I mean, just all these, you know, sayings that don't serve what money really is. Money is nothing more than a tool. That's it. It's a medium of exchange. It's a tool. And we don't have to be limited. I mean, take a look at a lot of these self-made, highly successful people. How did they do it? Well, they didn't do it from having money. They did it from having a different mindset around it and from, you know, not being bound by limiting beliefs around it. And so I just think that we need to serve the youth, those that are younger, in a better capacity by openly talking about it, talking about mistakes that have been made, getting people that are, if you're not educated as a parent, getting people that are to be able to talk about it, but not just people that are in the industry. I look at the financial services industry as a very corrupt industry, similar to the way that I look at politics in the fact that a lot of the people that manage money are not actually good at it. I'd rather you bring someone in that has experience doing whatever the thing is. Maybe they're an entrepreneur, maybe they're you know, a corporate, you know, business professional, but let's get the real story. What have you done well? What mistakes have you made? What would we avoid? But let's talk about it. Let's talk about how much money we have. Let's talk about our cash flow. Let's talk about our net worth. Let's talk about our expenses. Let's talk about all of it. I mean, that's how we get better.
Absolutely, yeah. So speaking of your own journey, what would you say is your favorite investment or your favorite financial choice that you made?
Ooh, I mean, I could go in a few directions with this one. So number one is I think the best financial choice I ever made was investing in myself and my own education. And that was is through books, through podcasts, and through relationships, people that were close to me. Second, though, I would say is network, peer group, mentors. You know, it's investing in spending the money to get in the rooms where there are more people playing the game of business and life and wealth building at a higher level than me, and paying to have mentors in that space. So that would be the second thing. And I know both of those are not the tangible thing that you probably thought I was going to answer with, right? When you're asking like, what type of investing? But really, to me, it's like number one, invest in yourself. Number two, invest in your peer group and your mentors.
Absolutely.
You know, but then number three, if you're talking like technical, what should you invest in? You know, you can make the argument that real estate, if purchased correctly, is hard to lose money in, and there's not a big ceiling, so it, you know, incrementally should appreciate over time. Businesses a lot riskier, but there's no ceiling, so you could lose money, but you could make, you know, an outsized return. And I think it's different strokes for different folks, you know, as the saying goes. And some people are built to be entrepreneurs, and some people, you know, maybe they're built more to be investors. But I would say figure out what's interesting. Whatever is interesting, you're going to have the desire to learn and grow and get better at and network to meet people doing that thing. And that's, I think that's a good use of time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So then finally, like so much of your advice has centered less around the tangible, like you were saying, and more around almost your soul, your financial soul, and who you are as a person. Who would you say, you mentioned your buddy Dustin from when you were younger, who was somebody that influenced you to realize it's not about I invested in this particular area and I got that, but rather that it's about investing in yourself. Who drove you in that direction?
You know, I really think the people that pushed that the most to me, I mean, I had many people that encouraged me to read when I was younger. I
That's
mean,
awesome.
Robert Kiyosaki was probably the first author that got me excited about learning and reading. And like, you know, I went from graduating school having to read certain things because it was assigned to Robert Kiyosaki made it so that I wanted to read stuff that I was interested in. So that was really big. Tony Robbins had a huge impact on me. So did Jim Rohn, which is Tony Robbins' mentor. Richard Branson had a huge impact on me. Sam Zell, many would consider him the greatest real estate investor of our time, maybe ever. You know, he had a huge impact on me. But all of this happened because I read their books, listened to them on podcasts, and because I'm wired a certain way, I just find ways to meet these people. You know, I'm just going to figure out how do I get in the room with these people. And it's cool that I've gotten a chance to meet all of them.
Wow, that's amazing to meet your heroes. And it didn't work out. It wasn't like the saying where you don't want to meet your heroes.
You know, it this was, you know, it's interesting. These individuals, I mean, not all of them were exactly what I thought, but all of them were so worth meeting and so wonderful. And I had some that just so far exceeded my expectations, like Richard Branson and Tony Robbins. I had one idea of what it'd be like to meet them, and they just, you know, flew past it. I mean, they're just wonderful. It's not to say the others aren't. I mean, those two just really, I mean, Richard Branson specifically. I mean, my daughter has dyslexia. He's a dyslexic. He made a video for my daughter by name, talking about how it's a superpower and the greatest gift that he was ever given. And so to, you know, to connect with someone on that type of level is pretty powerful. Not to mention all the other things I picked up, you know, hanging out with him on Necker Island.
Wow, that's amazing. I think that's such, it's so important to talk about meeting people in person and creating relationships, especially when we're addressing my generation that's coming up right now, because we're so centered on technology. And I think it's an amazing stepping stone, but I think a lot of people are becoming very fearful of those in-person, real-life encounters that get you videos that encourage your daughter, that get you to learn. And I really, it's amazing that you're saying it flat out, meet people, because I think that's so essential. And my generation needs to work on that a little bit. But
I think
thank you so
so.
much. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it, Justin. Is there, I guess, very, very last thing, what's like one thing that you want to give, not even necessarily to this generation, but your younger self? If you could give him a piece of advice, a word, a sentence, whatever, what would you say?
I'd say take action today. I end each of my podcast episodes asking my audience, what's one step you can take towards financial freedom today? And I just
Wow.
wish I would have started sooner. I mean, that's it. I dragged my feet. I was scared. I didn't know how to start. I had every excuse, under the sun for why I didn't get started. And eventually I just said, you know what? Enough's enough. I'm going to do it. But I could have done that years before I did, I mean that would be it. And for anyone that wants to get ahead, I mean, we've got so much. If you go to lifestyleinvestor.com, we have so much free content there. I mean, blog posts and just content, free downloads, all types of gifts. If you get the book, there's a link that you can get all kinds of free resources. And I'm talking like, I mean, pretty comprehensive. I mean, we almost made a book out of all the free product that we give out. So,
Wow.
yeah. So I just want people to know, like, at certain tiers, I mean, our, the mastermind's kind of higher price point. The master classes are at all various different price points, but so much of what we have is free intentionally.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, thank you again,
Wow.
Jess. I
Yeah,
appreciate
thank you so much. I want to stay in touch. I was a part of the group on a small scale. I want to be able to connect around this foundation concept because it's really just been talking to you.
I
So,
love it.
if there's a way to, learn more and be included for her sake, I would be so honored.
Well, let's do. And I can also put you in touch with the people that are kind of getting the program off the ground. So,
Oh my gosh, come on. I
yeah.
welcome it, my friend.
All right. Well, thank you for what you two are doing. I think you're making a lot of change and having a lot of impact in the world. And probably the depth of it is unknown and unfelt at this point in time as you're just getting started. But I think the ripples are going to be very large and very far moving.
Oh my
Wow.
goodness. Well, I know we're in the right room right now. So thank you so much. Thank you again. And thank your family for giving me this time.
Take advantage of the abundance of complimentary resources Justin has made available at lifestyleinvestor.com. This has been Relocate Mom Radio. For more free content like this, ebook resource, and group coaching, take the National Mom Challenge.com. And discover which of the three parent altars you are. Relocate your inner mom. I dare you. Hashtag co-work saves the child. Family rocks. Shouldn't yours? I'm Adelaide. Thanks for listening.